We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring the Jewish Hour's own representative out there in the world who goes and finds wonderful places to eat and to interest and excite your interests and excitement. That would be our own Hannah Finman, who's the arts and entertainment and culture correspondent. We also have lots of wonderful music. It is Adar, so we'll be playing lots of happy stuff throughout the show. The portion of the week is the portion of Tetzaveh, and it can be found in Exodus chapter 29. We have something very insightful there for that in the second half hour of the show. There's a Hasidic story at the end, which is pretty, you're gonna think, wow, that's pretty heavy. Do that all the way at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Two soldiers were killed and 10 injured as a truck crashed into a convoy in the Golan. The IDF is investigating the nature of the crash, but believes it was merely an accident. Omar al-Abed, a Palestinian convicted of murdering three members of an Israeli family as they sat around their Shabbos table in the West Bank, was given four life sentences. Al-Abed was ordered to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in compensation to the family. The Knesset approved legislation that would place control over universities and colleges in the West Bank under Israel's Council for Higher Education rather than the Judea and Samaria Council for Higher Education. The approval came a day after Israeli lawmakers agreed to put a proposed bill on hold that would give control of Israeli settlements of the West Bank to Israel's land agency. American billionaire Sheldon Adelson gave $20 million to Arrel University to build a medical school in the West Bank. It will be Israel's sixth medical school. The U.S. House of Representatives unanimously passed the Hamas Human Shield Prevention Act, which condemns Hamas uses of civilians, including children, as human shields, and emphasizes IDF efforts to avoid civilian casualties. And finally, this is actually a bit of note, archaeologists in London determined that a ruin found underneath a men's clothes store is a 700-year-old synagogue. The site features four pillars and a place for an Arna Kodesh where the Torah is kept. A glass floor was to be put into the shop for people to see the ruin, but workers put in a cement floor, and now you can't see it anymore. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online the Jewish Hour's own art, culture, and entertainment correspondent, co-producer of the Jewish Hour, and co-director of Jewish Ferndale, Hannah Finman. How are you today, Hannah?
I am, thank God, fine. How you doing?
Good, thanks God. Happy Sunday morning. So, you've been, just since we're schmoozing it already, and I know you're into this type of thing, so do you prefer your coffee pour over or French press?
Just strong, honey. Any way you do it.
Okay, like me, strong. I know, yes. Yeah. Okay, without any point. So, okay, last week you went to New York for a bunch of reasons, which is a good thing, you know, if to do something, you know, go spend time a week in New York City, you should have like a bunch of things to do. So, where do you want to start?
Right, it's a kind of a kaleidoscope trip. And I come on usually around this time of the year to talk first about the Lubavitcher Rebbe's wife, who they both have passed. It's been, 30 years? Am I right?
30 years.
Which seems like an incredible amount of time for something, you know, like a yahrzeit that is so precious to so many people who we come from all over the world to honor the Rebbetzin's yahrzeit. Her name was Chaya Mushka Schneerson. Her father was the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. And did you have anybody on the show talk about her this year?
Not this year, no.
Okay, so, you know, imagine a woman who was born in a family with her father being a Rebbe during the worst times in the Soviet Union, where religion is forbidden, especially Judaism, especially Hasidism, especially the Lubavitch form of Hasidism, which was very popular. So they wanted it out of there. And so these people were raised in this tyranny, pure, unadulterated tyranny. People were killed. Friends were taken away in the middle of the night and never heard of again. That was her childhood, her young years. That was her life as a young woman, and she did a lot of heroic things to help keep her father safe, because he had the death sentence on him, and they took him away, and she helped him. Then she begged her husband, after they got married, to accept the leadership to become the next Lubavitcher Rebbe. He did not want to do this, and it took a lot of conniving and convincing negotiating. How do wives talk to husbands to keep her father's vision alive, to keep Jewish identity and Jewish traditions and customs alive? And that was in the United States when he took upon the mantle becoming the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lubavitcher Rebbe had a huge influence. He changed the whole outlook of the way people practice Judaism and think about how to practice Judaism in the United States today. So she was quite some person. So for her yahrzeit, the shluchos come, who are Chabad representatives from all over the world, from every speck, every continent, every island. It's amazing. 3,000 women come to honor her yahrzeit, besides everybody else who's coming to honor her yahrzeit. And we have programs around the clock. We share ideas. We talk, inspire each other, and everybody goes home again with a heart full of good feelings, of camaraderie and warmth, and have the fortification to go back to their very faraway places sometimes. You know, the far corners of the world, or even in Jewish communities like here in Detroit, to try to wake up Jewish people and to honor and love their traditions again.
So you came back inspired.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that was just the, I wouldn't say just, that's the real reason why I go. And it's a spiritual thing to honor someone on their yahrzeit. That means the anniversary of the day they passed away. So that's like a whole topic. So besides that awesome experience of joining with so many other women and wonderful discussions, we talked a great deal about women's health this year, which was very interesting. And we also talked about the idea that sometimes a Jew might feel that their efforts are insignificant, because what do they do already? They lit a Shabbos candle, but maybe their brain is all, you know, congested with all kinds of problems in life and all kinds of stress, and don't really feel very spiritual. They might feel lonely, or they might feel kind of different than their friends sometimes, too, who are celebrating non-Jewish holidays. They might feel alienated. But the point is that it's the deed is the essential thing. And even if a person lives in kind of a boring situation where they don't feel it in their heart and they're not really connected mentally either to the greatness of what they've just accomplished, we have to remember that actually doing these things, whatever it is, if it's keeping kosher, giving some money to a worthy charity, whatever we do, teaching something to another person that's Jewish, like how to read the Olive Base, these are all phenomenal things. And we always have to remind ourselves that these are amazing, godly instruments that we bring into this world. And we should be quite enthusiastic sometimes just thinking about it, just pondering on it. But during the time when we're running around and doing these things, we could feel very nonchalant and bored. It doesn't matter. The deed is the essential thing. So that's what we talked a lot about. Right, because you think, you know, these are Rebbetzins, these are leadership people all over the world. You'd think everybody has this feeling burning in their heart, but it might just be they have to fill up the car with gas to get to a school to teach something. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, that sometimes it feels like we're just drudging around for how many thousands of years, just drudging around trying to do Jewish life. Anyway.
I hear you.
So that was the tip of the ice. I mean, that was the best part. Now, before that, I had quite a huge schedule of cultural events, which I'm sure you're at the edge of your chair.
I am waiting with bated breath. And I'm not even using fish bait, no.
Yeah, well, I hope I conveyed something of the amazingness of that Chaf Beis Shvat gathering for the Rebbetzin's Yahrzeit. She was such a remarkable person. So, anyway... So the fun stuff that I ran around for, I just have to tell you, Herschel, that on our show, The Jewish Hour, we have had some amazing, wonderful authors speak about their books.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, on this trip, I got to meet some of those authors or see their what they wrote about. And I'll start when you say go.
Go.
Well, let's talk about the Kosher Wine and Food Fair, the expo on Pier 60, which is an in-gathering of the tribe of winemakers, spirit producers, and amazing foodie bits from New York and the world. And that was pretty amazing. Imagine, I was representing the Jewish Hour, having fun tasting the French champagnes and comparing them to the Italian and the even the Oregon kosher wines now. I think that they're kind of new on the scene, the Oregon Rosés, kosher, hello.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Pretty phenomenal. And sampling the amazing Araks. There's a company out of Monroe, New York, that's making flavored Arak, which I thought was the most delicious thing I've ever tasted. So that was a lot of fun. Also, they had a huge range of Israeli wines this year, and I thought that was the most important thing at the Food and Wine, Kosher Food and Wine Expo this year, was the quantity of Israeli-made wines, which are great. You can literally go back and forth and compare the wines from around the world, and the Israeli wines are top-notch, and they're affordable. So I think it's really wonderful to support those Israeli wines. And yet, the most far-flung, interesting thing I think I tasted was a cognac from the region where they make cognac in France.
It was cognac from Cognac.
Yeah. Well, it's a town that's actually not called Cognac. It's called something else. I can't remember what it is. But you can get a beautiful kosher cognac somewhere, $145 a bottle, you know, a specialty
aged I'll take a dozen.
Wine. And that is an interesting thing to sample. So, yeah, I didn't really much care for the lamb bacon. Not my thing. They had that kind of, you know, experimental kosher food, I guess you can call it. But I would suggest anybody is in New York this time next year to try to go to the Kosher Wine and Food Expo at Pier 60. Who puts that together? It's
the Herzog Warren people. Yes, the Royal Warren.
Right. So, Herschel, you interviewed them last year quite extensively. I did talk to some of the California wine growers about the vines, and they said they did not lose, the Herzog Wine people said they did not lose their vineyards. Remember,
from the fires.
We were all concerned.
Yes.
Yeah, they had a method to salvage their vines, which is, you know, a zillion-dollar industry. So good for them, despite all the fires. So next was something that you did discuss on the Jewish Hour.
Not that long ago.
Author, his name is Benjamin Blech, who came on the Jewish Hour several years ago to talk about the Sistine Secret. Remember?
Yes.
Michelangelo's Forbidden Message in the Heart of the Vatican. What a great book that was. Mm-hmm. And we had the pleasure to meet the author when he came to speak here in Detroit. And he told some marvelous stories about how he put together that book. Well, the Met had a Michelangelo, or as we were trained to say, Michelangelo exhibit at the Met, which featured the actual drawings that Michelangelo made, which then became the Sistine Chapel ceiling. And see, why are we talking about this on the Jewish Hour? Well, Benjamin Blech described how there's crypto-Jewish messages throughout the ceiling, the most famous artwork in the world, that actually are pro-Jewish and talk about the great sentiment, the great feeling and admiration that Michelangelo had for his Jewish teachers. He had some as a child when he was being raised in the Medici home, which was like a monster-sized castle, not like a little bungalow. And he, as a young man, he was allowed to attend the classes that the other Medici children were able to attend because he was their, like, token prodigy who worked in their gardens chiseling away. And when he came in and he heard all of these scholars from all over the world in the Medici household who were their honored guests, he learned a lot of Jewish ideas. How did he learn that? Well, 1492, the Jews were expelled from Spain, and there was this constant presence of Jewish scholars, medical scholars, Kabbalists, all kinds of interesting midrash were discussed in the Medici home, and he absorbed all of that. And according to Benjamin Blech, that's what he's portraying on the ceiling in the Sistine Chapel for Pope Julius. And it's just amazing when you have read the book that you discussed on our show, The Jewish Hour, and with that in mind, looking at the ceilings, and it's a very unique interpretation, but it's there. Of course, the drawings are spectacular. 500-year-old drawings are interesting to someone who likes to draw. It's mind-blowing. It was super crowded, and a great deal of prestige for the Met to host these drawings and have a replica of the Sistine Chapel ceiling in the museum.
Yeah, so you had a replica of the ceiling. Cool. You could just, like, look up and say, oh, there's that, and there's the,
yeah, but
like,
it's all backlit.
The
so
of
you
God.
See the pictures better than you would see them at the Vatican, which I did go to see. You don't see them very well in the Vatican because you look up, they're very high, they keep the room dim in the actual Sistine Chapel, very dim down light, so you see sort of a blur above you, a magnificent blur. And then they are always, and then they say to you in Italian, "Move along."
Right.
They have these big guys there, "Move along."
No, you really
have no chance to really take it in, except the gestalt, the whole feel of it. You can't really see too much detail when you're really there, unless you're smart enough to bring some kind of a, a device to see far away. What do you call that?
A telescope.
Not a telescope, not a microscope.
Binoculars.
Binoculars. Yeah, if you're smarty pants and you bring binoculars that have some light in there, then you'd be able to see it better. But you're walking. They won't let you sit around when you're really there. So this was better in a way because it was backlit. You could see the colors beautifully. And then they had the actual drawings encased and numbered. So it's kind of like the old Kent cigarette ads, you know, where you match the drawing with the
picture. Actually, those I don't remember.
Okay. But they made it easy, schmeasy, for anybody to figure out which drawing matched the actual painted figure.
Okay, let me just jump in right here. If you're just tuning in, our guest today on the Jewish Hour is our arts and culture and entertainment correspondent, Hannah Finman, just recently back from a whirlwind tour of New York City, where we're discussing Jewish things that happened in New York City. So what happened next then? What other thing piqued your interest?
Yeah, I just will give a plug for the book. Benjamin Blech, go read the book, The Sistine Secret. You'll love it. Okay, next. The Jewish Museum is one of my favorite spots in the city. I talk about it sometimes, about some of the wonderful things that are there all the time. A couple of years ago, I did a show for you about the permanent exhibit there. But what's on loan now is from the Israel Museum, and we talked about this on the show. When the Israel Museum first started their costume show, they have an exhibit that's made into a gigantic, gorgeous coffee table book, which we have here. And we did a show about it a few years ago when the Israel Museum first started that show. And what they did was you had Jews who lived in far-flung places around the world, and a lot of women kept their own or their grandmother's wedding dresses, and they gave them to be archived properly in the Israel Museum so that Jews from around the world who come to the museum can understand what dress looked like in Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, in Morocco, in Algiers, and in the Americas, in England, and all over the world where Jewish people live. And sometimes they had a specific way of dressing. Sometimes those specific ways of dressing were forced upon them, of course. They had to wear certain colors, or they weren't allowed to wear certain colors, or they had to be covered a certain way by law, especially in Muslim countries. But to see the actual dresses, now they have about 50 of them, on a beautiful exhibit in the Jewish Museum in New York. And I'd urge anyone interested in textiles, anyone interested in dress, costume, to go. And even people who aren't interested, go anyway, because it's a great deal of fun. And it only takes about an hour to walk through to see these men's, women's, and some children's clothing. And I'll just tell you about one of them real quick.
I was just going to ask you, tell us about one that really caught your fancy.
Yeah, my fancy. I mean, you couldn't help but to fall in love with this dress. It's the color of a pomegranate, that beautiful, rich red. And guess what it was? A wedding dress. This is before modernity. We call modernity around 1930. Before then, Jews had lived in far-flung places, did everything themselves by hand. So imagine a wedding dress. The Silver Woman, it was her own wedding dress who donated it. She wore the dress that she donated. And she and her father took them 4 years. They had to get silkworms, let the silkworms eat lots of, what do they have, mulberry leaves or something?
Yep.
They grow, and then you take the fuzz off, right, the little cocoons.
Yep.
They had to spin their own silk, raw silk, and dye it, weave it, and then embroider this spectacular dress. When I say spectacular, it's nothing like a modern dress. It looked like a very simple dashiki, but just sort of like blousier, a little bit cut on a bigger angle, more of a triangle shape. It's absolutely interesting to look at and to think that the father and the daughter together created a dress that took 4 years from the little silkworm to finished product. How cool is that, right? And in such an interesting color, because women didn't start wearing white dresses until Queen Victoria decided she wanted to wear a white wedding dress. So that goes back, right, to the mid-1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, colorful dresses, that's what people wore for weddings, but we're just not used to seeing it. And there's a Jewish custom that we make a shechianu, a special blessing for a new thing when we get clothing. But people don't do it anymore because clothing is so easy to find. It's not such a big fancy feeling to buy a new dress. But imagine why the rabbi said we had to make shechianu on clothes when it took 4 years and you had to get your little silkworms organized. Then you have to thank God for that dress. Okay. So that's the Jewish Museum.
Mm-hmm.
There's still more.
Let's go.
Shall I continue?
Yes, please.
Oh, great. Okay. Recently you had on the show a magnificent interview, I think. The Book Smugglers by David Fishman, who's a JTS historian, he's faculty there. And he wrote this amazing book called The Book Smugglers. And if anybody was listening that day to the show, was listening now, you would understand my excitement of going to a place called the Center of Jewish History near Chelsea in Manhattan, where they actually have the objects, the most interesting, I think, objects described in his book, The Book Smugglers. And that, I'll just, in a nutshell, repeat that there was an institution called YIVO. They wanted to do a scientific cultural survey of Jewish life in Europe, and this was before the war. And then they were all historians. They were grammarians. They were language specialists. These were wonderful intellectual people. Of course, they all wind up in the Vilna ghetto, and they're starving, and it's horrible during the war years. And Hitler realizes, his men realize that some of the documents that these people had been working on in their institute might actually have resale value or could be interesting in a museum that the Reich would be making that they never made, thank God, which was about the demise of the Jewish culture. Hello. So they take these people out of the Vilna ghetto, and they make them into slave laborers back at their old jobs. And that is what David Fishman describes in his book, which everyone should read, The Book Smugglers. You know, the Wall Street Journal did an article about the Book Smugglers a week after you had him on your show. So
we had it first.
So anyway, cutting to the chase here, there were survivors of the from that time. And those survivors were able to go back and take all of these objects that the Book Smugglers, hello, who worked at this horrible slave labor place, they had to collect thousands of documents there and preserve them for Hitler. Well, they didn't. They took the best things, hid them on their person and risked their lives, dug huge holes in the ground and put cylinders in the ghetto, under the ghetto, very, very deep under the ghetto, and said to people who were witnesses to see where they were putting these things, if any of us survived, they thought maybe one might, you'll bring this because Jewish culture will survive. We might die. Jewish culture needs to survive. And this is the story that described it, the Book Smuggler, so eloquently. Well, I got to see some of those objects. The Pinchas, which is the account books of from Vilna. So this was the Vilna Gaon, who was a great sage in Vilna. It was in handwriting. We call it Kasav Yad, the handwriting of all the people for hundreds of years describing births, deaths, marriages, and happenings in their town. And to see that, and the person who smuggled the book out actually wrote his name in ink on the same page as all of this intricate handwriting. He wrote on a page, he wrote his name, the date, I think it was 1943. He didn't think he was going to survive, but he was kind of one of the leaders of the Book Smugglers, and to see his name, which is also historical, next to hundreds of years of Jewish history in a place that where Torah study was paramount and cherished and families thrived for hundreds of years, to see them juxtaposed to each other, you are very moved. Let me just say that. There were diaries that were kept by people. It was against the law to keep a diary. Jews who kept diaries anyway, teenagers who did not survive, who were all massacred, all murdered. There's some of those items in the exhibit as well. And to think that all of these things in a very small exhibit, they probably have about 50 objects that, out of thousands, of course, that these are the objects that people risk their lives to retrieve. Amazing.
And they're all right there.
That was a big deal to see them.
That's pretty incredible. What else does that museum, what was the name of that museum again?
Yes. The Center for Jewish History is a remarkable place. I spent a lot of time there. I spoke to one of the curators who hopefully will be on the show in May because they're doing a very special show about Jewish people involved in NASA. And outer space, And that's going to be a cool show for you to do. But they have ongoing programs there, the Center of Jewish History. They have concerts. And they also have something quite unique. It started in the year 2000, that's 17, 18 years ago now, where they made a resource center for people who want to know their genealogy. They want to know when Uncle Sam came over around 1910, well, we don't know much about his family. Maybe we can find out where they lived and who their relatives were and what they did. Because for most Jewish people that I talk to, they have absolutely no knowledge of anybody in their family except their parents and their grandparents, if they're so lucky, if their parents weren't, grandparents were not murdered in the Holocaust. Depends on the age, of course. But we can't go back too far because everything was obliterated. There's very few people who really know which town and what they did and who they were and all that stuff. Most people don't have a clue. But we can go to this place, and they will help you. It's very quiet, and they have all the resources there. And the, when I say by resources, genealogy, a lot of things you can get on the Internet now. The resources they have that are different are expert people, live, living experts, who will sit down next to you and guide you. They also have a quite an extensive rare book collection. It's the home of YIVO nowadays. And also, it is the offices of the Primo Levi Center, which is a whole other kettle of fish we don't have to talk about right now. Maybe one day we will, because that is fascinating, about Italian-Jewish history and interest. But wonderful. Anyway, so it's quite a small place. It's quite an interesting place. And people have a chance to stop by and see some of the other exhibits, which I won't talk about, at the Center of Jewish History. By all means, just look it up on the Internet, and if you're in New York, try to pop in.
Wow, sounds like a packed time that you had, Mrs. Finman.
Oh, yeah. It just gets more and more and more, and I know we're pretty much are out of time now.
Yep.
So I'll just thank you for
Well, thank you for coming on, and this is fascinating and piqued my interest, and I'm sure it piqued our listeners' interest. And
yes, and as you said in the beginning, the coffee is very important. If you're going to do any of this, you got to get fortified as you go. Right.
Okay.
Coffee is important to have the stamina to run around the city, but it's great. New York, I tell you, when you're from the Midwest out here and you go into New York, and there's so much rich cultural everythingness there. It's really a lot of fun, I have to say.
Wonderful. Glad you had such a great time.
Well, okay. I wish you a good week. And thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming on. And we reserve the right to, reserve the privilege of having you back on again sometime, Hannah Finman.
Okay.
So if you're just joining us and you missed it, well, you'll have to listen to when it comes back out in about 20 minutes or so on rabbifinman.com. Our guest today was Hannah Finman, who is the art, entertainment, and cultural correspondent here for the Jewish Hour, also the co-producer of the Jewish Hour and the co-director of Jewish Ferndale. We wish you continued success in all of your travels, Mrs. Finman.
Thank you so much. I'll say l'chaim to you on Chazano Coffee.
There you go. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Time for a little music. This is brand new. This is Yoni Z. The song is called Ma Nasa. What can we do?
Thank you.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Feynman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is new band out there. It's called the Soul of Klezmer Band, and the song they're doing is called just simply a Mazel Tov medley. Thank you. Why go anywhere else when you go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Shelton, and here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is also brand new. We like to keep things cutting edge. This is Lenny Solomon, schlock rock fame. He's still churning them out. This one's Can't Stop the Praying.
I got my feeling. It's on my arm. My thoughts are heavenly when I put them on. I got my feeling. It's on my head. My mind and soul cleave to the omnipresent God. I got four partial on the parchment. Say the blessings diligently. I'm connecting to the maker. I won't stop. Ooh. I'm acknowledging above me, cause it's part of my legacy. Can you focus? God's my rock. God's the top. The Israelites, when they chose, we were insane. So spiritual, it's very clear. Souls in my blood, the praying's on. We know the reason we're in control. Our prayers soar, we're feeling that we're in the zone. I got four partial on the parchment. Say the blessings diligently. I'm connecting to the maker. I won't stop. Ooh. I'm acknowledging above me, cause it's part of my legacy. Can you focus? God's my rock. God's the top. The Israelites, when they chose, we were insane, and now everyone knows. We will do, then we will hear was our pose. It's majestic. Anytime we pray as Jews, we enhance, hands, hands, hands. Do good deeds is what we do. Take the chance.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's portion is the portion of Tetzave. It is concerns primarily the making of the clothing of the high priest, who was the one who did all the stuff. He was the big kahuna, you might say, who did was in charge of making sure that the temple, the sanctuary, was working the way it was supposed to be made. There were shmeina begadim, eight different pieces of apparel which the high priest wore. And he had to wear them. If one was missing, it was like bad news. He wore a turban, a head plate, a shirt, knickers, tunic, apron, breastplate, and belt. We're going to talk about the belt. If all the things to talk about. I was at unfortunately this last week, was helped participate in making services in someone's house who had lost a relative. And Hasidim wear something called a gartel, which is this, my gartel I keep in my pocket, it's basically a black string. It's about maybe 7-8 feet long and probably less than the width of my finger. And I wrap it around my waist before I pray, as do all Hasidic men. And someone asked me, what's the story with the black belt? And I responded, well, that just shows I have a black belt in Judaism, which everybody laughed. And my poor off Justin, Jason just gave him a nice little smile. I was cute, Rabbi, very cute. But then I explained to him that just like in martial arts, we may have gotten it from Judaism, that before we engage in such an act as relating to the Almighty, so we put on a belt to separate the lower part of the body, which contains the kishkes, the stomach and the intestines and everything else down there, from the more ethereal, the heart, the lungs, which take care of like circulation and air and respiratory, these things providing oxygen to the brain. So there's a separation there. And this belt goes, well, our custom is to do it, like right if you hold your elbows next to your side, right there at the elbows. Okay, some do it a little lower, some do it a little higher. This our custom is right there. The belt, this gartel of the high priest, was actually, it's 32 amos long, an amma being about a foot and a half. So 32 by a foot and a half, is you're talking about 48 feet long. And I think it was about 4 inches wide. So this by the time he put this thing on, it was probably like quite stifling. I don't know if I could be a high priest for many reasons. First of all, I'm not a Cohen, and I'm not that high. But second of all, the clothes that this person wore, tremendously heavy, to indicate that the gartel, this belt, was an expression of heart. It was to show that the main thing, it was worn, it was the last thing mentioned, and it is the garment which is put on last as an indication that's what's most important in a person. You have somebody like a leader, like a high priest. What's most important is what's doing in his heart, and that should be the most external expression. And that's true with us also. We have to take, unfortunately, right now, well, fortunately for the sponsor, we have to take a quick commercial break. We will be right back with the Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way, rabbifinman.com. What will you find there besides the ability to contact me right on the homepage? You'll find archived editions of the show going back 2.5 years, thanks to jcastnetwork.com. You'll find archived editions, the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic Story, classes, all ways in which yours truly conveys Judaism in an entertaining and educational manner.
You'll also find the very important donations page, which is how the show gets paid. We are now approaching the end of our 21st year that we've been doing. It's a long time for a radio show. I was a little kid with a voice like this when I started this program, but now I have a voice like this. No, actually, it hasn't changed that much in 21 years. I've had this voice since I was about 12. So, but we are counting on you to go to rabbifinman.com. Go to the donations page. Click a number. If you've got PayPal, which is how it's all done through, it's very safe, secure. If you've got a PayPal account to your PayPal account, from my PayPal account, from yours to mine, take about 30 seconds. So entering the credit card number will take about three minutes or so. You can make it so that it happens automatically every month. And you'll feel good about the fact that you were able to support radio worth listening to. Don't like internet giving? I understand. Drop your donation, any amount, to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. What's going on at Jewish Ferndale? Well, Wednesday, February the 28th, we'll have Tapas Purim, Spanish style dinner, preceded by the Megillah reading. That's at 6 o'clock. And the tapas dinner is $20, $25 at the door. You have to go to jewishferndale.com to reserve for that. And if you can't make the 6 o'clock Megillah reading, we'll have another one at 9:30. It'll be like the party to go to. Everything else, and I'm telling you, tapas, this is it. This is where to go for it. We also, this coming week on Tuesday, there's a Mommy and Me. If you're a mommy and you have a kid between 0 and 4, 10:30 to 12, we're having a Mommy and Me, and that's $3, and it's a great time for the kids. They'll be doing something Purim-esque. And go check out the Jewish Ferndale website and like us on Facebook to keep apprised with all the things that Jewish Ferndale is doing. Okay, there was a young man who came to the Baal Shem Tov, and he was having all kinds of problems. He had problems with his kids. He had problems with his business. He had problems with his own health. He had problems with his landlord. He had all kinds of problems. Said the Baal Shem Tov just took a look at him and said, "I can't help you, but it's not right that you come to me and I can't help you." So is there an interesting thing? It says that he took a volume of Baba Basra of the Talmud and opened it up at random to page 9a, and his eye caught a verse from Job that said, basically, I'm not going to quote the verse exactly, that Job was blessed because of his charity that he gave. So Baal Shem Tov thought for a second, why was my eye attracted to this? And he remembered that there was a certain person by the name of Shabtai Meir of the city of Brody who really excelled in giving tzedakah and giving charity to the point where sometimes he would even borrow money to give charity. He said, "I can't bless you, but in the merit of his charity, what you should do is travel to the city of Brody, find this person, Shabtai Meir, and ask him for his blessings." So the man traveled to Brody, found who this Shabtai Meir person was, and asked if he could spend the Sabbath with him, which, of course, he invited him in, and he treated him royally, but not uniquely royalty. Everybody got the royal treatment in the house of Shabtai Meir. And on his way out on Sunday morning, so Shabtai Meir said, "Are you perhaps indigent? Can I give you a donation?" He said, "I don't need a donation. What I would like is for you to bless me with to solve this problem and that problem and that problem and that problem." And Shabtai Meir gave him a blessing, and his blessings came true. So we see that in something like the merit of giving charity, supporting those who do not have, the Almighty does open special channels to you, the donator. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. Hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a good week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.